This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Tevi Troy to the show. He is CEO of American Health Policy Institute, former Deputy Secretary of the United States Department of Health and Human Services under George W. Bush, author of the best-selling book, What Jefferson Read, Ike Watched, and Obama Tweeted, 200 Years of Popular Culture in the White House, and the new book, Shall We Wake the President? Two Centuries of Disaster Management from the Oval Office. Tevi, welcome. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm great.
Good. I assume you're coming to us from Washington, D.C.?
I'm in the Maryland suburbs, but very close.
Well, a close assumption there. Yeah, not bad. Yes. You know, obviously a lot is changing in the political realm. Just a 180-degree shift in policy I think we're going to experience under the Trump administration. But, you really go back and you look at two centuries of disaster management from the Oval Office. Tell us about that. Sounds like a pretty pessimistic title. Has any president done a good job? Give us some insight into the title.
I wouldn't call the book pessimistic
okay.
at all.
Oh, okay.
It recognizes that presidents face crises.
Right.
And how they face them is an important part of how they are judged.
Sure.
So, in fact, I have in the book, in Shall We Wake the President, in an appendix where I list the five best and five worst presidents when it comes to dealing with disasters. So just to give you a little snippet, Woodrow Wilson classifies as the worst president when it comes to dealing with disasters because on his watch, we had the 1918 flu that killed 675,000 Americans.
Wow.
And Woodrow Wilson did very little about it.
Yeah. Wilson would be the worst. Now, is it possible to be bad at disaster management but be an otherwise good president, or can you not, just not separate those two?
That is a good question. I would classify George W. Bush as a good president, but I think he did a bad job with Katrina.
Right.
So he actually makes my worst list for his Katrina handling, but he also makes my on my best list for his handling of the 9/11 disaster.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about Obama, getting us into the very modern era?
He does not get classified in my book because there were no disasters of that magnitude in the Obama administration, but there was a point in which he was somewhat exasperated by the number of disasters he faced. It was when the Somali pirate thing was going on,
right.
And he said to his aides, "Who thought we were going to have to deal with pirates?"
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. Tell us a little bit more about the book in general. I know I've asked you some specific questions, but it's very interesting to look at the five best and five worst presidents as far as their management of disasters. But as the old saying goes, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? So does that
absolutely.
Come into play?
Yeah, in fact, I put Bill Clinton on my best list because of his work at preventing the Y2K crisis. This was the crisis around the 2000-year switch from 1999, and people thought all the computers were going to melt down because they couldn't handle the switch from 99 to 00.
Right.
And he marshaled state, local, federal forces, plus the private sector, plus our international partners to make sure that didn't happen. We don't know if it actually would have been a crisis, but the fact that Clinton prevented it means we'll never know, but that's a good thing.
Right. No, it's a good thing not to know. Okay. Other examples of prevention, if you want to share any?
So in the book, I obviously have the presidents and the history of the presidents and how they've dealt with disasters. I also have a policy part where I talk about what we can do to prevent or mitigate these disasters going forward. But then I also have a separate section for acts of God and for acts of man and what you as an individual can do to prepare yourself and your family should something bad happen.
Yeah.
Because I believe that you shouldn't be able to count on, or you shouldn't count on, the federal government coming to bail you out in the immediate aftermath of a disaster. So you and your family need to be ready.
Right. And so under acts of God, you include pandemics, food and water crises, weather, economic collapse. The acts of God, that's interesting. Economics is under there.
Yeah. You know, I went back and forth on that. Right. The acts of man are malicious acts by an individual or group of individuals. And the acts of God are things that are external to any one individual's control.
Right. Okay.
So that's why I put the economy in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So I can see that rationale. You've got, for acts of man, terrorism, bioterror, loss of the power grid, civil unrest. Very interesting. Okay. So what do you think we can expect under a Trump administration? I mean, no one knows what crisis will hit, but I can just imagine Trump will deal with it very differently, probably, than any president maybe in history, or at least modern president.
Look, you never know what a president's going to do, and you never know how a president's going to handle a crisis, and you also never know what crises the president will face going in. But what you can do is look at the presidents and make guesses based on how they behave, how they might handle it. Now, with President Trump, I see both some assets and some liabilities. In terms of the assets, I thought he was very good when he responded to the Baton Rouge flooding this summer, and he went there and he handed out supplies to people, and he seemed compassionate, and he seemed on top of things, and there were very good optics at that session. So I give him good marks for that.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you need a president to be very upfront with the American people, and you need the American people to trust what they are saying. And if you have questions about the credibility of an individual, then that could make it harder for the president to ask folks to do difficult things in a time of need, like take a vaccine or shelter in place or evacuate. And so I tell the story of Gerald Ford in the swine flu of 1976, how Ford, after Watergate and after Vietnam, he got up there on TV, he rolled up his sleeve, he took the shot, the swine flu vaccine, and he asked the American people, every man, woman, and child, that's a quote, to go take the vaccine. Only about 30 million of a country of over 200 million people took the vaccine, and that indicated that there was a lack of trust in the president at the time. Mm-hmm. Now, it happened that that particular swine flu wasn't as virulent or problematic as we feared, and so it's okay that not that many people took the vaccine. But still, if you, as the president, get up and ask the American people to do something, you need to have the credibility with them to make sure that they do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question about it. And the president sets that example in so many ways. Okay, so, you know, I'm wondering, under Trump, it's interesting that Trump has been accused of being a sort of a cyber bully, or maybe a Twitter bully is a better term. Specifically, his first lady, Melania, wants to campaign against cyberbullying, which is kind of interesting to me, almost a little bit of an irony. I don't know if the accusation about Trump is fair, but he's certainly outspoken. My criticism, even though I'm overall a fan, I think, at least in comparison to the other choice I had, is that he's rambunctious, right? And, you know, a little reckless. That's going to come into play. I mean, you know, any other expectations on what we can expect under his administration would be, we'd love to hear them.
Well, I think we saw a number of top military leaders in some of the most important cabinet positions, including Homeland Security and Defense, both of which are departments that may come into play in a disaster. And I think people in the military are good at dealing with crisis, responding to crisis. So I think that's probably a good sign in terms of what we can expect with a crisis. Mm-hmm. I also think that on the other side, unfortunately, there's a slight lack of experience in government. These are some very experienced people overall in the administration, especially in the cabinet, but they don't all have government experience. And it just takes time to learn the ways of government and to learn the various roles and responsibilities. And so that could be a challenge if he faces an early disaster in the first couple of years. But that does happen. Remember Clinton, Bush in 9/11. Obama had swine flu in March of his first year. Obviously, Herbert Hoover saw the stock market collapse in his first year. So the first-year crisis is a thing that happens to presidents.
Sure. Yeah. Interesting. So Trump being an outsider, which many viewed as refreshing, including myself, or possibly refreshing, it does have its downsides, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, it's kind of a mixed blessing. Things are up and down, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk to us about your other book. And you've got a few books out, by the way. I didn't mention the other titles. But, you know, what did Jefferson like to read? What did Ike like to watch? And, you know, what did Obama tweet? You got to make a sequel to this one in 4 or 8 years about Trump's tweets, because
I'm already thinking about it. But and just to be clear, I mentioned those three presidents in the title, but it's about all presidents and their cultural interests.
Yeah.
But since you asked about those three in specific, Jefferson was a voracious reader. In fact, at one point he said, I cannot live without books. Mm-hmm. He had an enormous library of something like 4,000 books at a time when books were incredibly expensive.
Right.
If you had bought a first edition of Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations in 1776 in the colonies, mm-hmm. it would have cost you the equivalent of about $600, which is probably what it cost you to get an iPad today, which could hold something like 50,000 books.
Right, so adjusted for inflation, that's $600 for the book. Wow, that's incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was very expensive to buy books back then, but the fact that he had this library of thousands just proves how devoted he was to books and to reading.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of Ike, I pick Ike because he's really the first president of the television era who would sit and watch TV on a regular basis. In fact, the social aide in the White House lamented the extent to which the social calendar in the White House was set by the TV schedule, because that was before DVR and before you could record shows and get them on Netflix. When that episode of I Love Lucy was on, it was on, and if you missed it, you were out of luck,
right?
Even if you're the president.
Yeah.
And then Obama tweeting. Look, obviously, if I wrote the book later, I would talk about Trump tweeting, which may have more resonance to the American people. But Obama was groundbreaking in being the first president to tweet. Mm-hmm. He had an active Twitter account. He had 60 million followers. And when the tweets came directly from him, he would have the letters B-O at the end to signify that he's written that one himself.
Oh, as opposed to a staff person, right? Yeah.
Right, a staff-generated tweet.
Yeah. Interesting. Any insights into how the pop culture influenced these presidents? You know, did it show up in their policy? I mean, if one president's watching I Love Lucy, you know, you'd think he'd be cheerful.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. With respect to George W. Bush, mm-hmm. the books he read often had an influence on the policies he put forward. We talked about flu earlier. He read a book on the great flu of 1918, and he was determined that the U.S. government wouldn't be in the same position as Woodrow Wilson, and he therefore demanded that his staff, including myself, who was working there at the time, come up with a flu plan so that the U.S. would be ready if a flu broke out. And we ended up using that flu plan in 2009 when Obama was president and the swine flu broke out. In terms of political mindset or a worldview, Obama watched more TV growing up than any other president up to this point. And that really helped shape his worldview, but also it helped him connect to the American people. People talk about what an intellectual he was, but he was a big, big TV watcher growing up. He talks about how he would sit and watch TV with his grandfather every single night until Johnny Carson came on, and then he would go to bed. So Obama, big TV watcher, but in a way that allowed him to connect to the American people. While he had a childhood that was relatively divorced from the mainland, he lived in Indonesia for a long time, he lived in Hawaii, and he wasn't really part of the core American culture of the lower 48, I would say, until he started going to college there. So he had a lot of catching up to do, but that catching up was made easier by the fact that he was such an inveterate TV watcher.
And I assume he probably got a decent amount of that American TV around the world. I mean, you know, even in Indonesia, I assume he got some of that stuff over there, but, you know, not as much as of course, we...
Well, he got everything in Hawaii,
because
obviously that's part of America, but Indonesia less so.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting stuff. You also do a lot in the healthcare field, of course. You know, what are your thoughts on the changes? I mean, huge shift, of course. This was Obama's prize legislation was the Affordable Care Act, or otherwise known as Obamacare, and Trump plans to totally dismantle it, or, you know, at least significantly dismantle it and make changes. Is that going to be possible for him? Is it going to be a good idea? You know, what are your thoughts on the healthcare side?
I do agree that the Affordable Care Act was an extremely problematic piece of legislation, that basically raised the cost of healthcare overall and subsidized some select few with high-cost subsidies, but
right.
not the
bulk. And by the way, I'll just comment, at my company, our healthcare costs went up 35% from Obamacare to now, or to last year at least. Yeah.
And your experience, I'm sorry for it, but it is not unusual.
Yeah, I know.
So that is a big problem, and I don't think that's the way to go about it. I think what the Republicans need to do is to pursue a policy that will lower the overall cost of healthcare and thereby incentivize people to purchase it on their own, as opposed to the current approach of making it mandatory to purchase it and subsidizing some select few in the purchase of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that is doable, and you have had Republican proposals in the past that were scored by CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, as having the capacity to reduce the overall cost of premiums or the average cost of premiums. And so I would like to see them go in that direction.
Do you think it was Obama's intent from the beginning to have a single-payer system? I'm suspicious that it was, just because, you know, you knew that the market forces would ultimately go in that direction. I mean, well, at least I thought so. Curious on your take there.
You know, I try not to ascribe the worst motives to people that I disagree with. And so I will take him at his word that he wanted to improve the hybrid system we have, where a lot of people get their health care through the government, Medicare, Medicaid, over 100 million people get their health care that way. Mm-hmm. But we also have 170 plus million who get it through the employer-sponsored market, which is more of a free market. And so again, I'll take him at his word that he was trying to improve that system and increase access within it. But even if you take him at his word, I don't believe that the program was successful.
Yeah. I know we've got to wrap up, but I just want to ask you a couple more quick things. Thoughts on Trump's first week? He's been in office for a week. What do you think? He's busy, that's for sure.
They talk about energy in the executive. Well, yeah. He certainly has it in spades. It has been a very busy, very active first week. I think some things he got a bit of a bad rap on from the media just because there's so much hostility between the two of them. Some things maybe I wouldn't have done, like make such a big deal about the numbers at the inaugural. Mm-hmm. And some things I think were hopeful, such as making it clear the administration's opposition to the Affordable Care Act, making it clear that this administration stands strongly with Israel, making it clear that it's going to be a different approach that really focuses on the American worker and tries to improve things for average Americans. And it seems like he actually did pretty well in the public opinion polls in the first week. Mm-hmm. In terms of the reaction to his speech and the support for those early initiatives.
I thought his inaugural speech was fantastic. Of course, those are just words. Who knows if, you know, any politician can keep those promises, but I thought it was really kind of a historic speech. I thought it was fantastic. Just partisan opinion, but that's mine. If you have any thoughts on that, feel free to share them. But, you know, on the pop culture, the one thing I didn't ask you, Trump is not just a participant in pop culture. He is pop culture. I mean, with his experience in all of the books he's published, I don't want to say written, but I'll say published. And then, you know, being on The Apprentice and being so flamboyant. I mean, he's the wealthiest president we've ever had. He's certainly the most famous president we've ever had. And he is a pop culture icon. You know, how do you think that'll play out in his presidency? If any thoughts on that?
Of course, that is a really good point and a really interesting question. He has been part of the national consciousness for decades. He has shown up in cameos in dozens of films over a multi-decade period. I was watching with my son the movie Die Hard 3 recently, which was made in 1995, mm-hmm. and that movie had a reference to Donald Trump that was an unexplained reference. You had to know who he was from the context, and there was no further explanation, but it just shows how famous he's been for so long.
Yeah, very interesting.
And so he, in many ways, is like Reagan, although he's more famous than Reagan, in that he used his pop culture skills and knowledge and his experience behind the camera to help him in the political sphere. This does not mean that Tom Cruise or Tom Hanks should go run for office because Trump has blazed the path. I think that if you have a different set of experiences, if you've been successful in your life in another way, like Reagan as governor of California or Trump as billionaire real estate mogul, then you can use pop culture to help enhance your career. But I don't think you can just be an actor and then make it in politics.
Very good point. Well, Reagan, you know, he switched parties when he was president of SAG, and, you know, he was such an incredibly inspiring speaker, and I think at the time he was elected, he was exactly what America needed. It obviously, it depends, right, on a variety of factors. Tevi, this has been fascinating. I know you've got to run. Give out your websites. Tell people where they can find you.
So my website is tevitroy.org, TEVITROY.org, and you can follow me on Twitter, @TeviTroy. And the book is Shall We Wake the President? It's available. You can get it via my website, but also at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or bookstores near you.
Tevi Troy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check out HartmanMedia.com for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.